There are over 5 million people living in Sydney, and space is hotly contested. The part of that space reserved for amplified music, even more so. It's ever-changing and often under threat. This is the Behind the Scene podcast series, hosted by me, Niall Hoskin. This series will explore the creative ways musical communities in Sydney are using space. From cultural clubs, repurposed inner-city warehouses being used for all-night raves, to the great outdoors. These are stories about musical communities thriving in unique spaces in the face of unsympathetic government and local law enforcement. This first episode is about a connection between the Portuguese community and the local punk scene. We start this story in about 2014. The lockout laws have just been announced, and further from the city, police and local councils have started to crack down on unregulated venues. Sydney's underground music community is feeling the crunch. I invite Max Easton over to my house to talk about these years. Max is a writer and musician who is a big part of the Sydney DIY music community. With planes flying overhead and a steaming pot of tea, we sit down at my rickety dining table.
So, what's the best way to set up this? Like, if should we put it in the context of why you're looking for venues to put bands on?
Yeah, sure. I can go back to like 2015 perspective.
Yeah.
Is that how it happened? No. So at the time it was like 2014, 2015, and I've been playing in bands for a few years.
Max was seeing an increasing trend of playing gigs in average pubs to rooms full of people who didn't really care if the music was coming from an iPhone or a live band.
Yeah, so maybe more on that, like what was lacking about those gigs?
I just think feeling, like there was no feeling to it. There was nothing that felt like what attracted me to music in the first place, where it was like you met these people who were there to see the music and you made relationships with them, and then you start a band with them. And there were like dedicated venue spaces and show spaces, which felt, real and intimate.
So
Max felt fed up by the way things had been done in Sydney and was soon leaving for a job in Montreal. But before that, he wanted to hear some of his favourite bands play together. To do that, he would need a venue, something that could cater to the idea of community that Max felt so strongly about and seemed lacking at that moment in the Sydney pub circuit.
What was that? What was that process of looking for buildings or looking for a space? Like, how do you even do that?
Well, I don't think I'd... Yeah, with... So the show that we did was at the Portugal Madeira Club in Marrickville. And that was purely because I go for these morning walks because waiting for my visa to come in. And then, I walked past this cultural club and they were opening up. And I just kind of, like, walked in and asked them if there was any way to book the function room. And, yeah, then everything kind of went psycho from there.
What was there? Had this space ever been, like, you ever heard of it? Like, this cultural club?
It was down a side street. Like, I'd seen it before, but I didn't really know what it was. And it was like a Portuguese community centre. And, like, they would have, like, Portuguese folk music.
Fado?
Yeah, Fado. Like they do that.
Fado music, famous for its melancholy sound and songs about the harsh realities of life. Maybe not too thematically different to the punk music that Max wanted to play.
Like they do that, and they'd have like the community events there, like birthdays and weddings and stuff. It was dead all the time, and like I went in there that night and like asked how to talk to someone to book the venue, and then I went in a week later with some friends just to have a few drinks to kind of like show that we're good people, because you know I never used the word punk music, but you know that's going to be a little bit off-putting to that community perhaps. But yeah, I had to sit down with the club president, and it took weeks because I'd call him and he'd like answer in Portuguese, and I'd try to say hello and he'd just like get angry at me and hang up. And then yeah, eventually I just like got through to him and yeah, sat down for a beer with him in the front bar and the like four other like old Portuguese drinker dudes and like talked about the show.
What did you say about the show?
Yeah, I don't know. Like I actually really, really liked him and it took a while, but you know, like we got along really well. But it was simple. It was just like, I wanted to put some bands on. And then he was like, how many people do you reckon? And I was like, oh, you know, probably it could be like 50 or something. And he's like, that's all right. And he's like, the drink alcohol. I was like, yeah, they'll drink heaps. Like, you'll make a lot of money over the bar. And he's like, it's good. We really need the money. Like, it's a good idea. And he's like, but there's to be no drugs. And I was like, well, I was like, look, like I can try, but I can't speak for like 100, 150 people. And he grabbed me by the shirt and he was like, first you said 50 people, now you're saying 150 people. It's like, I'm an old man, I know all the ways, don't bullshit me. And he's just like shaking me down. I'm just going like, I don't know. Like, there could be 50 people, there could be 30 people, there could be 150. And I think there were like, I think it ended up being like 130 or something that showed up. But and there was fucking like people taking drugs everywhere, like, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't violent or anything. But
could you describe what's so effective about it, a space like this?
For me, it was, so it's a cultural club, and I saw a real, and this is not new, people have done this like a bunch of times, but like a real connection between community of like their cultural community of like the Portuguese community club and what we were kind of doing as sort of like underground musicians, if you call it that, which was making music around community to be self-perpetuating and to serve the community and to like in a way be a conversation, which I think was really similar to what they did in their club, the way they like preserve their own dance, their music, the events, in the food, like their kitchen, that sort of stuff. I think there's a real parallel between the two things. It was like, I could see a real exchange in wants and needs. Like, we needed space to enact these things and they needed some kind of income separate to their own activity. So I think there's a real opportunity for exchange there, which I think we did.
Listening to Max's story about this night made me think about how much fun it can be to expose yourself to things which aren't the norm. What a strange and special connection that must have been between the two communities, if only for that night.
Yeah, like, and that was a fucking, that was like a, it felt like a magical kind of moment. Like
a magic moment. Gigs would continue to happen in the club, but soon the inevitable potential to make real money would make the space unattainable for much of that same community.
And you know, like, it feels good when like everyone in the room's kind of drunk, like all this music has just been played and you got like all these like old Portuguese guys and they're like tailored pants and like shirts, giving you hugs, calling you a good boy.
I was hooked on the cultural club. These are just the kind of spaces I wanted to explore. Community-based, non-commercial, and steeped in history. I knew of another venue in Surrey Hills called the Gaelic Club, which served the Irish community, but I was pretty sure they also did punk gigs. After a few emails back and forth, we set up a time to meet the following week. I wanted to find out about the other side of it. What was it like running a cultural club in Sydney? So that Friday, walking through the hustle and bustle of Central Station and through a door painted a striking shade of green, I found myself at the Gaelic Club. Climbing the stone steps, I could hear the sounds of traditional Irish music swelling from the floor above. There's a lovely vibe in the room. A group of people are sitting in a big circle playing music, and there's a bar at the back that looks like you could just sit at it for hours. After awkwardly taking a seat at a table for the length of a pint of Guinness, I'm approached by the guy I'd been emailing, who at this point I only knew as Carl. Carl takes me to the back of the club, to a meeting room. The room is filled by a big wooden table, and the walls are crammed with books and pictures. The only indication we're still connected to the pub is the number of coasters scattered on the table, and the song and revelry seeping under the door. It feels like important decisions have been made in this room. I get Carl to introduce himself.
Exactly. Just, yeah, when you're ready.
Okay, so I'm Carl Kinsler. I'm president of the Irish National Association, and I'm also on the board of the Gaelic Club.
He asks me whether I want the aircon on, and I stupidly say, sure, I'd love that. Luckily, it's quiet for most of the interview.
Why don't we start with, talking about the history of the club and you saying it's quite progressive, etc.
Yeah, so look, when the Gaelic Club was established in 1974, it, as well as, there were a lot of Irish-related activities. There were dances, concerts, sessions like we're hearing in the background now. But it also was a bit of a hub for progressive politics. So there were meetings here, there were events, and also it was a bit of an alternative space for music as well. So I mentioned there was a dub reggae club for years here. There were all kinds of music, jazz music. So it wasn't just Irish. It was always a space where it was welcoming to other things.
I mentioned Lockout Law to you previously. Yeah. How do you see the venue sitting within the Sydney like nightlife landscape?
Sitting below the radar for most of it, I would think. It's a place a lot of people know about and a lot of people have forgotten about. And it's a place, I think, over the years, a lot of people have got good memories of. A lot of people have been to events and dances and gigs and raves and what have you here. When the lockout laws come into place, I think suddenly a lot of venues weren't available. Huge impact. We all know the impact. It was terrible on City of Sydney nightlife. And I think this space became rediscovered, I guess, by a younger generation of people who were looking for a space to hang out in, to do gigs in. And as we've done for generations, we've welcomed people in and they ran that. I probably think we got into a bit of trouble where suddenly we lost sight of, or the Gaelic Club lost sight of what it was doing for its traditional community. And the balance kind of was a little bit out of kilter because there was so much pressure for other venues, for venues. I think that balance is being restruck again. And there's going to be changes to the lockout laws. They're hopefully going to be scrapped soon or modified. So I think that'll shift things again.
For any cultural club, it seems that juggling responsibilities and commitments can be a challenge. I wanted to talk about the space itself and why it was so sought after.
There's certainly something unique about it, that it's almost, it's non-commercial in a sense, right? It's, well, there's no pokies, there's another, it doesn't feel like other venues in Sydney, essentially. So,
yeah, well, it's not like other venues in Sydney. It is an authentic space, community space. And there's not many of those left. So the pokies, good point. We had licenses for pokies, which we sold back to the state government 9 or 10 years ago. Basically because we didn't think it was right to have poker machines in a small community club. And we just thought, well, if we sell them back, surrender them, that question is then answered forever because you're not going to get them. And nobody has really complained about that. People notice that there aren't pokies. The problem with that, of course, is you forgo the revenue. So we have to think, well, how do we make the space work and pay for itself?
And that's been a challenge, post-pokies?
Oh, it's been a challenge even with the pokies, to be honest, sure. Right? And when we had the licences, it's always, because it hasn't ever really been run as a commercial space, because the commitment is to all the other cultural activities, you know, and you're never going to get rich having Irish language classes or step dancing or set dancing classes. But it's an integral part of what we do. This place was built in the 50s as an Irish cultural centre, and we take that seriously. That's our mission. Somebody told me that the life of an ethnic club, if you like, is probably two generations. You know, the ones who arrive and set it up and their kids. And after that, you know, the need or the use is gone. People, you know, they fragment the communities, they're integrated, etc., etc. That's not the case here. So this space has been around since the 50s, the organisation, the Irish National Association, since 1915. There's still a need, and yes, I've got an Irish accent, but there's lots of people with Australian accents who are involved, and half the musicians tonight are probably Australian. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, they're not necessarily Irish.
So do you see it as, for these third, fourth generation Australian-Irish, that they look to this place as part of their heritage, this space?
I think some of them do, you know. So I don't know if you noticed the guy I was chatting to at the bar earlier on.
I did, yeah.
So he's in a band called The Bottlers, and I'd met him before. His parents met each other here, okay? Wow. Now, if I had a dollar for everybody who told me that story, I'd have a lot, and it's a true story, lots of people did over the years. And, you know, so there's an Irish connection with him, just to take him as an example. And he just feels like he's coming home when he comes in here. And he's pretty Aussie, you know, from the western suburbs. But he just feels like he's coming home. And he just likes the vibe and the atmosphere, and because it is different.
It was time for another pint. Back outside, the room had filled up some more, and the music didn't seem to be wrapping up anytime soon. Later on, heading out onto the neon-lit Devonshire Street is a bit of a rude awakening after the warm vibe of the Gaelic Club. The pubs on every corner in front of me don't look half as appealing as the experience you can get through that green door and up those stairs. I think I'm starting to understand what Max meant about that magic moment. Next episode on Behind the Scene, we are leaving the Cultural Club and entering the Warehouse. For more podcasts, visit next.afters.edu.au/nextpods.